This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Everyone, welcome to Jikoji on this whole day. Before we begin, I want to call attention to the fact that we are actually on the land of the Ohlone people. They were the first people here. And the Ohlone have inhabited this entire Bay Area for 10,000 years. So we want to express our gratitude and appreciation to the Ohlone. We acknowledge this gratitude and our thankfulness as an ongoing process of recognition in our own process of how to recognize the first people, and that we are all immigrants on this land, all of us. And we acknowledge our responsibility to participate in recognizing the Ohlone. So thank you. So if you haven't noticed, the seasons are in motion. And with their shifts, we can't help but notice change. The gusting winds, the falling leaves, the mist that we walk through in the morning, and the plip-plop of the rain on the windows and the roofs and on our heads. They all seem to be calling us to pause and reflect. And the Buddha described life's unpredictability, change, as the eight worldly winds, the loka dhammas. Loka means beings, dhammas means law. So these are the laws that beings have to accept. And the principal one is that everything's shifting, completely unpredictable and beyond our control. Maybe you've noticed that life has not given you exactly what you think you deserve, and that it's not so predictable. These loka dhammas, by the way, they're sets of twins. So these things that beings have to accept, there are four sets: gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. So the Buddha makes many references to the weather in his teachings. He speaks about mental turbulence as like a storm. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, like a stormy wind uprooting a weak tree, craving uproots the untrained mind. The craving to which the Buddha is referring is our wanting things to be different than the way they are. Craving is another way of expressing resistance. I want more of this, and I want none of that. Resistance. In another series of talks called the Ivyutaka, which, by the way, have an interesting history. I'll give you a little snippet. There's 112 of these little talks, and they were all memorized by a laywoman who was a handmaiden to a queen who was not allowed to leave the temple. And she went and heard the Buddha speak because the queen wasn't allowed out. And she memorized them all. And the Buddha referenced this woman as being one of his, I think, the foremost of his laywomen students. She had memorized everything. So that's a collection of her memory of the Buddha's teachings. In any event, in that collection, the Buddha brings the weather in again to compare spiritual practice to planting seeds. With care and the right conditions, seeds grow and bear fruit. What we plant and cultivate here is what we become. And it's what we do with that becoming as well. So the weather is a frequent presence in the Buddha's teachings. And why is the weather such a handy metaphor? Well, it's everywhere. And let's also consider how the weather, you experienced the weather this morning in your zazen. So one thing I want to say that I was almost giggling during my zazen this morning, because in a few minutes you'll hear this insight I had about sound. Really, my son taught it to me. And so I was noticing this morning that how many of you have squeaky jackets or noisy clothes on? Just everybody with clothes on, make noise. Just do this. Okay, remember that sound in a few minutes, okay? So as we sit zazen, we are instructed to simply watch this body mind, watch its experience. We watch what arrives in our experience just sitting here, doing nothing but sitting here. It's just like what we might notice when we look out the window this time of year and see the falling leaves. I don't know if you noticed on the way up to Jokoji, the road and all the golden leaves on the ground. It's really something, isn't it? So when we're sitting, just observing our minds and bodies, it's the experience of being here right now. Nothing else, just this here right now. And perhaps you had a taste of that this morning. Just being, just experiencing this experience, whatever it was. And it included that sound. Go ahead, do it. Yeah. That was one of the sounds that we experienced this morning. Maybe you had other experiences here too. We noticed sounds, maybe smells, probably heard the fire. Thoughts? Did any of you have thoughts? Yeah. Ideas, opinions, itches and twitches. We got to know our knees and our backs and our shoulders and our minds. So settling into this mind and body experience of just sitting here today, into the actual living experience of this day, this morning, what is actually happening here and now, and also doing nothing about what you're experiencing, doing nothing but sitting. We are observing carefully how this mind and body experience is. As you go deeper and deeper, you have a more expansive and more expansive and a more generous appreciation for what this is. When we practice this simple observance of watching this mind and body, it's the observance of our own little weather channel. What's happening? What's happening in here? What's happening outside? Who is it that's noticing this and that weather outside? Sitting here, we sometimes get a little taste or a sound or a smell or a touch or a perception or an idea about some of our habitual patterns, kind of our go-to grooves with our minds. We begin to notice our views and our opinions. We begin to see quite clearly our preferred weather channels in our own experience. We can also learn to accept that we're making the weather, that we are the weather. This fragile case of chemistry that is this body, it imbues our experience with emotions, perceptions, feelings, ideas. Hence, we are the weather. And it can be quite liberating to notice that we are the weather and admit to the facts of what we experience just as it is, not needing it to be different. And without adding an opinion or a judgment or a mm-mm-mm or a woohoo, none of that. Just observing our own raw experience of our own weather. sunny today, maybe with a chance of showers. I'm not sure. Maybe a light snow. That's my fantasy. So last week, I was visiting with one of my adult sons for his birthday, and we went on a nice long walk along the Santa Ynez River down in Santa Barbara County, where I have a home. There was this gentle wind, and the leaves were falling, just like on the road up here, dancing all around in that beautiful little dance they do to touch ground. And the river was running, the river was tinkling with water. And we were noticing the kind of beautiful cacophony of all the sounds. And then we started noticing how all sounds seem to mirror each other. Like the wind sometimes sounds like traffic, and the traffic here sometimes sounds like the wind. And sometimes the traffic sounds like breathing. Sometimes breathing sounds like a train, especially if you're next to somebody who snores. So we spoke about the commonality of all sound. And of course, it's just waves, right? It's just the changing in waves that our ears pick up. But we talked about how there's this commonality in all of its forms. And then my son said, "Oh, we're not hearing anything. We're just hearing the sound of change." Maybe you felt the change today as we did Kinhin in here. You step in some places in the Zendo and it's warm. And the next step, it's cold. We have heated floors. Maybe you heard the sound of change. Maybe you heard each other making that sound. Or you heard your neighbors breathing. What we're hearing is change. What we live is change. And you won't be surprised to hear me say, we're the change. The sight of change, that's what we see. The smell of change, that's what we smell. Taste of change, that's what we eat. Think about it. Change is the only thing we can experience. And by the way, there is nothing else but change. So in Zazen, when we sit, we practice noticing, very tuned in noticing. And what is there to notice? Change. Whether it's the sound of change, the feeling of change, the taste of change, your opinion or ideas about change. In Zazen, we practice observing the weather. The weather of our perceptions, and they are constantly in flux. By doing nothing to alter our observations while we sit, we begin to unveil these habitual patterns, our grooves. The Buddha said that there is liberation from suffering, and this practice has potential to liberate you from your suffering. When we tune ourselves to the weather channel of our own lives, we notice our suffering. Sunny, raining, snowing, a sudden cold front, warm, relaxed. It's all part of a single momentary experience of this present moment. And that's where we enter to begin to know our own tendencies deeply. And eventually, we also know we have a choice about how to respond and what to do with those tendencies. The benefit of observing the weather is clarity about how to go forward with your understanding of your weather. Noticing your weather allows you to notice your resistance, how your resistance is the thing that is suffering. Noticing your resistance allows you to notice the opportunity to change. So, of course, there's an old story from the Chan tradition, an old Zen koan, that talks about change. This particular story is sometimes called the Wild Fox Koan. The Chinese master in the story is named Beijan. In Japanese, his name is Hyakujo. So sometimes it's called Hyakujo's Wild Fox. This is Kaz Tanahashi's translation of this koan, which I like his translation a lot. Ready? Snuggle up. Time for story. Every time Bai Zhang gave a Dharma talk, a certain old man would come to listen. He usually left after the talk, but one day he stayed behind. And he asked, Bai Zhang asked the old man, "Who's there? Who are you?" And the old man said, "I'm not actually a human being. I lived and taught on this mountain at the time of Kashyapa Buddha." Okay. I'm going to interrupt the translation to tell you that according to tradition, Kasapa or Kashyapa Buddha was a Buddha that lived in an earlier era before Shakyamuni Buddha. And he was 20 cubits high. I looked up how high that is. That's 30 feet. So, and he was supposed to have lived 2,000 years in three different palaces. Maybe a little apocryphal. So he was a towering figure, let's say. And this old man, speaking to Bai Zhang, said he lived and taught back with that teacher back then. So back to the translation. The old man says to the master, "One day, a student back then asked me, 'Does a person who practices with great devotion still fall into cause and effect?'" And the old man told that student, "No. Such a person doesn't fall into cause and effect." The old man said, "Because I said this, I was reborn as a wild fox for 500 years." And he begs the teacher, "Reverend Master, please say a turning word. Give me something to free me from this wild fox body." Beijing, the teacher, says, "Does a person who practices with great devotion still fall into cause and effect?" And Beijing said, "Don't ignore cause and effect." So immediately, the fox man had a great realization. And bowing, he said, "I am now liberated from the wild fox body. I will stay in the mountain behind the monastery. Would you please perform the usual services for a deceased monk?" So after their midday meal, Beijing goes to the monks, gathers them. They're very confused, like nobody here is even sick, much less dead. We're all accounted for. He takes them behind the monastery, and there lies the dead fox. And they buried him. Actually, they cremated him, as would befit a monk. So I want you to know that cause and effect is another way of speaking about karma. Karma is cause and effect. And this koan, this story of the wild fox, challenges us to consider whether anyone can escape cause and effect. It asks us to recognize that wisdom comes from aligning oneself with the natural flow of reality, not trying to escape cause and effect, moving with it, not clinging, nor rejecting what is actually here. So in this story, the old man, the fox man, was deluded, right? He separated enlightenment or awakening from the actual natural laws of reality. In other words, separating any experience, making something an experience with a capital E, is actually a form of resistance. This is special, that's ordinary, creates a duality. By creating the duality, we create a self with desire. I want that and I don't want that. We create a self that wants things to be one way or another. We create a self that thinks it's in control. The things it can control change. Well, I think we can all imagine the freedom of seeing everything as ordinary. If we see everything as ordinary, no special experiences, everything is extraordinary. So, in our story, the old man, Fox Man, thought that awakening, somehow removed oneself, awakening somehow kind of separated oneself from cause and effect. And I will tell you that most people who come to practice want to be freed from suffering. They want to be freed from cause and effect, which is mostly that they want to stop their minds. Well, separating one experience from another experience, wanting to stop our minds from being our minds, is like wanting to stop the weather. Good luck with that. We can't stop the changingness of life. It's a constant. It's the only constant that things are always inconstant. And it's a mistake in the first place to think that the weather is outside, that what's happening in this body mind is because of something from outside. It's inside. The whole world of existence is inside. It's inside this, here and now, this, right now. Nowhere outside of you. So the only change is inside. We're not in charge of the leaves falling or the rain flip-flopping. We're not in charge of that beautiful cotton candy pink sky we saw on the way to Zazen in the dawn a couple of days ago. The best we can do is admit what's actually happening. The leaves are falling. It's raining. So just like the fox man, every time we resist the natural rhythms of life, which is change, we suffer. We create a self of suffering. That's what suffering is, resistance to change. And there's clearly something in it for us to keep repeating our patterns of behavior. I know when I came to practice, I was really paying attention to my patterns. And I cried a lot because I could see that I had reinforced these patterns and kept repeating these patterns. And they were separating me from life. When I finally admitted that I wasn't in charge, and I started to see the possibilities, that I didn't have to be stuck there, that there was freedom. But the freedom was with being with what is here right now. For a while, I recognized that it was easier for me to suffer with the familiarity of my habits. It was actually more comfortable to recognize that, oh, I'm doing that again, rather than pulling the rug out and nothing to stand on. So for a while, I noticed, oh, I'm going to do this again because this is safer for me than nothing and not knowing what's going to be next. But guess what? We never know what's going to be next. We have no idea what's going to happen in a second from now. We don't know. Lightning could literally strike. So there wasn't anything to hold on to anyway. My patterns were just causing me to suffer. when one can surrender oneself to the rain and to the leaves, to the natural rhythm of life, we don't have to suffer. Not like that. And one begins to see you have a choice. It's a big thing with the Buddha's teachings. You have a choice. It's your life. Take responsibility for it. It's as if on the day you were born, if only this had happened, someone told you, and you could have understood it, you're responsible for one person for your whole life. Take really good care of this person. In taking care of this person, you will take care of the whole world. And that person's you. So, in Zazen, when we sit, become more and more aware of the truth of our existence, which is change. And this is impermanence. If we allow ourselves to notice that everything is moving, it tends to shake up our views. It shakes up our opinions that things should be one way or another way. It's hard to miss, as you're sitting Zazen, that the weather report is variable. Sometimes we are thrust from a reality that we thought we were going to be in indefinitely into a completely new terrain. It's so obvious if you're paying attention to your own life that you notice the change. And now you're in new territory. And you have to learn to walk. You have to learn everything again because you're a new person in a new land. Sometimes we can laugh at the folly of our assumptions. Sometimes we have to cry. This endless, inevitable changingness is the actual content of life. If we can allow this, then all of our views and opinions that we cling to, that we think are so unshakable, they just fall away as temporary conditions, as phenomenological. Just that was just what happened. This is just what I'm emoting. This is just what I'm experiencing. And knowing that, my friends, it's a relief. So there's another old story that illustrates how we like to cling to our views. Some of you may have heard this story. It's sometimes called hot and cold, hot and cold. And it's about how clinging to our views, resisting, is the essence of our suffering. So this story is attributed to another Chan master, Master Rinzai in Japanese, but in Chinese, Master Linji. Here's the story. One day, a long time ago, in a Zen monastery, a student asked a Zen master, "How can I escape the heat in the summer and the cold in the winter?" And the master answered, "Why not just go to the place where there's no heat or no cold?" Confused, the student asked, "Where's that?" And the master answered, "When it's hot, be completely hot. When it's cold, be completely cold." Do you understand how that's the place where it's not hot and it's not cold? The master tells us to get closer and then come a little closer and then come a little even closer and then completely be one with your experience of hot or of cold. Not separate from hot or cold. The mind or body, the mind and body of hot, or the mind and body of cold. The mind and body of grief. The mind and body of loss. The mind and body of joy. Our experience of all experience is just the temperature of a given moment? Can you be with it? Completely give yourself over to what is actually your experience right now. In this hot, cold story, the master is telling the student, don't deny your own experience. Stop trying to avoid your own truth. Don't turn away from the hot. Don't run away from the cold. It's only the temperature of your experience right now. The key is it doesn't have to be anything more than that. The temperature of your experience right now. And you needn't suffer hot or cold or grief or loss because you think you shouldn't be hot or cold or grieving or suffering a loss. That's the suffering. Be hot, be cold, be sad, be happy. It's the idea, the opinion that you shouldn't have to suffer that is the suffering. When we resist life's reality, in other words, when we resist change, we're creating a self that suffers. This self wants control. And it's kind of a self-protective control, right? If it were my way, I wouldn't suffer. But there's the suffering, having to have it your way. It's not the leaves that decide on their own when to fall, is it? It has to do with the whole system. The whole planet's turning. That's what causes the leaves to fall. Every condition since the beginning of a time informs those leaves. Okay, it's time to fall. Sometimes it's time to fall. Sometimes it's time to get up. I don't know if you've noticed this, but for years since, I won't say when. For many years, I've noticed this shirt that people wear. It's emblazoned with one word across the top. And what it says on that one word is resist. Oxford English Dictionary says that to resist is to refuse to accept or to be changed by something. Well, in the Buddha's teachings, as you might have guessed by now, in every place of our lives where we resist, what happens? We suffer. We are creating, by resistance, we create and empower a self that holds an opinion that things should be somehow different. Empowering a self is like protecting someone from reality, protecting someone, this one, from reality. In our resistance to the weather, to the hot or the cold, to reality as it is, we create a self that separates us out from life as it is. We create this self to have control, and it's no control to be had. Right now, outside, the leaves are coming down. They don't seem to resist. When it's time for the leaves to let go of the trees, they let go. It's not complicated. It doesn't look complicated. Yesterday, I hiked to the top of the ridge. I hope you get to do that sometime when you're here. I hiked all the way along the pond and then up to the top of the ridge. At the top of the ridge, it's really beautiful. I looked at the ground suddenly, and I noticed grass this tall is coming up. Little tiny shoots of green grass is already coming up from this big rains we've had. They knew when to emerge. Leaves know when to fall, shoots know when to shoot up. The leaves and grasses are preaching to us the truth of life. When it's time to fall, fall. When it's time to emerge, emerge. You and I, and by you and I mean every being everywhere, are the nutrients of the next moment. We're feeding the seeds that we plant here in ourselves, and therefore what blooms in us and in the whole world. The more we resist, the more we suffer. The more that we insist that life gives us what we want, the more we suffer. The more we strategize and pretend that if there's just some magic combination and you hook into it, life would be great and easy, the more we suffer. The more we think that some outside set of events is going to make us happy, the more we suffer. We simply do not and cannot know what's next. The only thing we can be sure of is not suffering.
Change.
Resisting change is futile. So the question is, what might happen in your lives if you stopped resisting the things that you resist? So just take a moment now and think about it. There's something that will come to your mind, the thing you don't want to admit the truth of for yourself. The discomfort of that thought, it won't hurt, hold it just for a second. There's some discomfort, something you don't want to look at. What would happen if you just admitted it? Just for a minute. For me, this always feels like a relief. It's like, okay, I know. I know what I have to do. I'm just avoiding doing it, but I know. I think we do know. It's inevitable that there's change. And only knowing that that exists is the way we can let go. Knowing that that exists, that we have this opportunity to say, okay, let go. Because when you let go, all the possibilities emerge for you to be reborn. Like those little green shoots up on the top of the hill. So seasons remind us of impermanence, calling us to pay attention, to care for ourselves, to nurture the soil in which we have planted some seeds. Water the seeds that you want to see grow in yourself. Don't water the ones you don't want to see grow. You have to take care of yourselves. I hope you will take care of yourselves and each other in this season and the next season. Watch your weather channel with the kind of gentle understanding that the seeds you water are what you're going to harvest. Please take care of the soil in which you're planted. And if you have to be transplanted, it's okay. You can do that too. So I'd like to close with some lines from the morning chant from this morning. This is from Shitu. He was the author, we think, of the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. You chanted this morning. Turn around the light to shine within. Just return. Let go of hundreds of years. Relax completely. Open your hands. Walk innocent. Thank you for your practice. May you embrace change and nurture growth and accept with a kind heart the rhythm of the seasons. Okay, it's your turn. By the way, before you ask this question, let me answer it. This is not anything I've said has nothing to do with you being passive in life. If you see a wrong and you feel called to do something about it, go do it. Acceptance does not mean passivity. Acceptance means understanding the facts completely, thoroughly, understanding the context of the facts. Nothing is monocausal, meaning nothing arises from one thing. That's why there's no point in blaming somebody or praising somebody. So before you go to, you mean we're supposed to sit around and watch war and do nothing? No, of course not. Do something. But understand your intention. Understand your interrelation with the whole picture. So you do something wholesome, okay? So I answered that question. Are there any other questions? I don't want to keep asking the questions.
How do we take responsibility for a life we have no control over?
That's a great question. Thank you. Well, I like to say that I used to have this argument with my kids all the time. Is there any free will? And I would say no, because you're not you alone. Right now, you're part of my family here. You're part of him and her and everyone else. So, and that goes on back forever, right? So we go back far enough, we have a common ancestor. And so how could your existence here be separate from everything that ever happened to bring you to this moment? So no free will, but responsible? Yeah. Because you're the only one that's responsible for your actions. All those ancestors, they did their part. It's up to you now to take care of what you are going to do in this body and mind in this time. And you don't have a lot of time, not to make anybody panic. But life is fast. So you're completely responsible for your choices. You're not responsible for all their choices that brought you to this moment. You're not even responsible for what happened to you in your lifetime up until this point, except for by virtue of your own actions. You know, the only thing you actually own is your actions. That's how you're responsible. Nobody's going to make you do anything. I really love it when people say, "You're making me feel this." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, really? What am I doing to make you feel?" I don't actually talk this way to anybody. I'm really nice. But in my head, my thought bubble is, well, all I can tell you is when I'm feeling something, it's not because someone is making me feel it. It's mine. And I have to choose to receive that reality of what I'm feeling and then decide thoughtfully with some love and compassion what I'm going to do with that feeling. It's up to you. Does that answer your question? Sorry, it's not the answer you wanted. You're responsible. No escape. Good luck. Yes.
Kind of wanted just to follow up on that question. You previously mentioned there's no, you don't believe in free will. You don't think there's free will. Then if there's no free will, where does my, how do I take responsibility for my actions? Where does my thought come from if it's not even free?
Well, your thought isn't just yours. Your suffering isn't just yours, right? Nothing you experience belongs only to you. You are kind of an expression of life. And then you have to make a choice about what you're going to do with what you, as an expression of life, receive. Because what you experience is just not yours alone. It's everything that ever happened. And even this context right now. Do you know how you got here today? Not in a car. I don't mean like that. Can you tease that thing out and say, "I know where it came from"? You can't. You can't. But now you're here. And now what's next for you? You're responsible for the thing you do next.
So you believe in personal free will, but just not as a society.
Yeah, I guess I should have defined free will, meaning that you're in charge of everything that got you in this moment. So I have a hard time when people are get real puffed up because I'm like, "Well, you didn't do that. Not by yourself. I mean, you should be happy that you're doing wholesome, good things in life, but it's not just yours. There's no way for you to separate from what's happened all through time. The good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful. It's up to you to go forward in your own expression, because there's only one you to do that. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going down the line. I hope you all have questions.
Cindy had a question earlier, though, at the end.
It's okay. I have a follow-up question. So as you mentioned, making a choice, so how can we tell we are making a choice out of free will or being responsible or just out of resistance?
I'm not sure if we could hear it.
Friends online, we're talking about free will and being responsible for your choices. And someone just asked, how do you know if your choice is, I'm going to say without, with quotation marks around it, the right choice, or whether it's a product of resistance. So let's see. I actually don't think you have any doubt about this, by the way. I think you already know, but I will spell it out because I think that it's helpful. So thank you for the question. You know what it feels like to feel yucky, kind of like not physically yucky, but just kind of like that feeling, yucky. It's a Buddhist term, yucky. No, that feeling of like, there's something to look at. If you're making a decision and you feel like, I would say there's something to look at. When you make a decision and go, okay, I've looked at all of the things that are yucky feeling in me, and now I'm making this decision, and then you just go forward and you live with the result. There is no right decision. There is making a decision right. Okay? There's a huge smorgasbord of possible right decisions. You have capacity for a bazillion decisions. The right one is the one that's wholesome. That means it takes care of you, takes care of the whole world. It doesn't separate you from his existence or her experience. It doesn't create division. It takes into account everything. Now, if you get really into this in your head, you're going to be paralyzed. So that's why I'm talking about paying attention to the yuckiness factor, okay? The yuckiness factor will guide you. Pay attention. Get to know. Continue to sit zazen, by the way, so you get to know your own experience and get intimate with it. And you'll go, oh, this doesn't feel good. What is it? It's not the other person. It's you. You're having a response that needs, that's asking for attention. When you pay attention, you'll have a sense like, oh, this is a pattern of mine. It's not so good for me. If it's not good for me, it's not good for anybody. So I think when you feel any kind of resistance, you're creating a self. And that resistance feels yucky. It doesn't feel good. Even if it's familiar and it's your go-to safe place, vulnerability is better than resistance, even though it's scary. But it takes some practice getting used to it. That's why we practice. We sit here and we watch the whole mess of our beautiful mess of who we are arrive in the seat. There's nothing else happening except us experiencing this moment, this moment, this moment. And then you make a choice. You get up off the cushion and you go live and you have to make choices. So pay attention. Attention, 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 as the old monk says. Pay attention. Pay attention to what feels like it's not causing you harm. And it's not going to cause the world harm either. Okay. Does that help? Yeah. Cynthia.
When you mentioned the resistance, almost like attached with suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you let it go, it's your choice. It's like your choice. But when I hear that, I feel like it's like a huge fear, like behind you can really let it go. Of course, we are sitting here, we're looking for the way to be not suffering, which means let the resistance go. But I feel like, I feel like fear, I feel like, do I have that courage or energy really do it in my daily life to practice? Do you really dare to like just let it go? I just share my fear right away when you mentioned that resistance.
I'm really grateful for this question because I want everyone to know that I thought this talk today was going to be about that subject. It was going to be about pulling. The Buddha speaks quite a lot about uprooting things, pulling them out by the roots. So maybe that's another talk, maybe next, well, not next week, but, and so I really appreciate this question because when I say to let go, I don't mean, there's resistance. Let it go, folks. It's not that facile, okay? It's not that easy. It requires you to be courageous enough to just look. And I actually not crazy about even saying let go. I like the term let go because that opening of the hand, I don't have to hold this. It's safe to let it go right here for a minute. But what I really think I practice with in my own life is, who is it? Who is it that's afraid? So I recognize the fear of letting go of this way of that I protected the self and how that self is suffering. Who is that one? When you can look at her or him or them, when you can really look at that with an open heart and compassion, you won't have to hold on anymore. That person becomes integrated. She will, he will, they will arrive in your lap very regularly and ask for your attention, and you'll take care of them. But they will no longer be in charge. You will no longer be reacting knee-jerk, instinctively, to protect them. In my own life, I hear you, Tenzo. In my own life, a therapist said to me, that how would I treat this fear and doubt if you came to me? She used my sons as an example. If your son came to you with this fear and doubt, what would you do? Well, like this, I said, well, of course I'd take him in my arms and say, it's going to be okay. Take that one, that fearful one in your arms and tell that person, I see you. It's going to be okay. Over time of admitting that this is what you're experiencing, this fear right now, not turning away, not trying to kill it, not trying to get rid of it, it allows you to let go. So don't push. Don't push her away. Don't force any letting go. Be with the hot, be with the cold, be with that one.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.